Welcome back to what we hope is a real radio station and a real radio show here, the Space K Sarah show on iRock Space Radio. But who knows? We might be, this might all just be a great big conspiracy. Somehow we have hacked into your phone and on your streaming waves of iHeartRadio, and we figured out a way to convince you that somehow we are legitimate radio hosts on a station. But really,
but secretly, we're all just Muppets.
We're all just sitting in our homes recording. Wait, or that's actually real. No, but we are real, and we are talking to you today about things that aren't real. And cue the X-Files theme music, because that's next on our list. Is that alien research is happening at Area 51. And I mean, we can't get into conspiracies in a conspiracy theory without aliens somewhere, and Area 51. Oh, it's a good one. That is a good one.
Better than Area 50. Not as good as Area
52. But I mean, much less 52. God, who cares about that? Kavi looks less than amused than I
just
am.
I'm just thinking about this whole, like, what was it? I think it was a Facebook event with hundreds of thousands of people registered.
Yes, we're going to storm Area 51.
Yeah, we're going to storm Area 51. Like, they can't, you know, keep all of us out. It's like, yes, they can. It's a military base. Like this idea of, like, oh, military bases are keeping secrets. Yes, that's a thing. That's what militaries do. Like, it just bugs me to no end. And to think that, like, an individual citizen should be entitled to every piece of information that every part of the military is working on, even if other parts of the military don't work on it. Like, it's, you know, it would be nice if everybody knew everything, but that's just not how the world works.
It's not how it works. It's also not a good way for it to work either, because, you know, if every government secret was let loose, I don't, there's a whole thing of ethics on this. Oh my god. Yeah, I don't know, it's I think it's rightfully so still a little bit of a controversial, interesting area, because it's still classified. It's still a classified area,
which is fine. It's fine, right?
Militaries have classified areas.
Every government has their place where they need to try new things, and they need room to do it, and luckily we have Nevada, where this is fine.
And it kind of goes back to your Arkham's Razor comment too, and stuff like that. That, you know, they're just testing military stuff. There's no aliens there. But
I'm sure
we love
really,
to make
really
up
cool stuff there. I'm sure it's amazing what they have there. And in time, when it's ready to be used, we'll learn about it. I'm sure. I'm putting a little faith in the government here. If there are aliens there, which I kind of doubt, I'm certain word would have gotten out by now. When was it created? In the 40s, 50s?
50s, Area 51? Yeah.
In over half a century? Not one little thing got out. Not one little alien gill or flipper. Nothing.
Well, nothing. Alf got out.
Alf got out. And did he have gills or flippers? No.
Also, like, wasn't he a Muppet? Wasn't he made by Jim Henson?
And wasn't his name was Gordon Shumway. Thanks.
You can't prove that.
Okay. So moving on from the aliens. There's this, like, three different things that popped up on this list, and I'm gonna clump it into one. And basically it's that there are interesting things captured by the rovers and by the Mars reconnaissance, you know, satellite that look like faces or pyramids or things like that. That's like, there's like three different instances of that on this list that, you know, I'm looking at this one right here that, who took this? Let's see. That there was like a female figure sitting on a rock. The most recent one was Perseverance, and wasn't it a pyramid or a box, something like that? That people were like, "Oh,
it was
my
a perfect
God,
square,
look at that geometric thing."
Like that.
Huh?
It was like a perfect square, box, or something like that.
Yeah.
Which it wasn't.
Oh, and the door.
The door. Yes. Have you guys heard of pareidolia? Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes. Yes.
Pareidolia.
That's what I was gonna bring up. Yeah.
So go for it. Yeah.
Yeah, no. I that's exactly what it is. we like to see things and things. It's the same phenomenon of seeing shapes in the clouds.
It's kind of, yeah, this pattern recognition is something that evolutionarily was developed, and it's something that humans are particularly good at. But the problem is that we're particularly good at recognizing patterns even when patterns are not there. In fact, there was this movie, I'm now blanking on what it was called, but it was this like black and white movie about a mathematician who goes insane thinking that there was this like pattern about the universe tied into
a beautiful mind. Black and white?
He said it was black and white.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Beautiful Mind, which is a great movie about John Nash and game theory and John Nash, you know, having schizophrenic episodes, paranoid schizophrenia, and believing that he was working for a conspiratorial government agency. No, this is something different. It's like some mathematician who thinks that, you know, the way that the pigeons are flying and whatever is like tied into this like giant pattern in the universe. But alas, there's a that's a very nice phone case, Benjamin, actually. But yeah, like we're really good as humans at recognizing patterns, but the patterns aren't always necessarily real. So like,
right,
you know, as you were saying, in clouds or constellations, it's just like, yeah, that looks like a person maybe, but also it's a collection of random stars at different distances doing different
right
things.
and we like to apply meaning to things, and like we do that with what seems like a coincidence and circumstantial things. This happened and this happened and then this happened, and our brains are like, oh well, they're all connected, it has to be that way, when really it's not. And I've actually spoken about this in the past on this station about this phenomenon, because for me, what just happened? You guys switched places. For me,
just disappeared for a second and gave me the win.
the beauty of evolutionary biology and understanding it and studying it is that it can make sense of so many idiosyncrasies of ourself. Like, you know, the seeing patterns and pattern recognition, well, that was very useful for understanding if there was a threat to your life and limb, or if it was just the breeze moving the branches or something like that. And so once, for me, at least once I understood that sometimes a lot of my anxieties and my stresses and thinking something is going to go wrong is just my brain doing what it evolved to do and to keep myself safe, has made a world of a difference for me in dealing with, yeah, finding, it can be as simple as you hear a little noise in your car and your brain is like, oh, that's it. The engine's going to fall out. We're going to die, right?
There's like a perfect, there's a calibration point there that is healthy, right? So like with the example of a predator that's, you know, coming through the bushes. And so our ancestors, you know, there were some of them who were like, really laid back and, you know, didn't bother checking what that noise coming from the bushes were, and many of them got eaten, and those people aren't our ancestors. And there are some people who were like over paranoid, and, you know, it affected the way that they were able to sleep or hunt or live, and that over paranoia, you know, meant that their genes also weren't passed down. And so it's this kind of sweet spot, this calibration point where it's like the right amount of pattern recognition, the right amount of, you know, should I be worried about this, that helps you lead a healthy life and worry the right amount about things, but also know when to dismiss things.
Sure. I don't know if I've struck that balance perfectly yet, but
I definitely haven't.
No. Yeah. So we're kind of running out of time, and I flipped through the whole list and I picked their last one. And I don't think it's surprising that this is the last on the list, because I think they saved the most message worthy one for the end. And the last one in this list of 25 is that climate change isn't real.
Oh yeah, Liz is right.
Yeah. All right. I think that was said intentionally.
Climate change is real.
It is real. It's real in two different ways. It is actually, you know, when you look at models and maps, like, again, the scientific method is not perfect, but it's a really good tool. And when you look at our data tracking pre, you know, industrial revolution, mm-hmm. through core sampling, which is very near and dear to my heart, You do see waves of climate change. But they're not anything like the brrrp that you hit once the Industrial Revolution starts. And unless scientists are blatantly faking it, akin to like the Earth being flat or the moon landings were faked, that is smack you in the face data.
I think, yeah, it's not just that it's like clear evidence of the changes that we're seeing now. It's that people have been consistently modeling the effects of, you know, what it can't be. So I just shared in our group chat a video that I made, or a sonification that I made, where you can basically look at the changes in the sun's brightness and the temperature that, you know, indirectly that we're getting from the sun.
I remember you making that, yeah.
Because like people love to say, oh no, it's not climate change, it's just, you know, the sun going through a regular cycle and that's what's making the, you know, the temperature differences. And so in that sonification that I made, I've actually like turned into sound the data of the sun, which goes up and down over time, and also the data of the global temperature averages offset, you know, compared to the average temperature of the past century, how much is each year offset from that. And while the sun is going, you know, the temperature average is just going and just exploding. And right. And there are people who, listen, I happen to know an astrophysicist actually who is working on, probably one of the few scientists who are actually working on research into climate change that isn't specifically focused on the human effect and is looking into, like, you know, the effect of the movement of the planet and the solar system through the galaxy and cosmic radiation and blah, blah, blah. But even with his research, it's an additional effect in addition to the stuff that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That in either case is contributing to very clear changes in climate, you know, pushing both the hots and the colds to the extremes. So yeah, it's very
I love that you pointed that out though, because again, in combating, you know, bad science communication, it is important to point out though, that there are natural causes for climate change as well. And that we're just adding to that. We're making it much, much worse. And also something that I should mention as being someone who's going on the Joides Resolution, and we do core drilling, our cores go back in time much further than the ice can. And so something that they are very interested in studying in terms of climate change is it's actually quite remarkable how well the planet is holding on, considering based on what we've been doing. And so they're very interested in seeing like history and what are the thresholds and how like they're trying to build that really big picture of like, well, it is actually quite impressive how well the atmosphere has been doing and our influence, like, you know, we had the hole in the ozone layer and we were able to understand the cause of that and mitigate that, right? And so Joides is very interested in, okay, well, they're not super doomsday, you know what I mean? I think that that's like a really important step in the message of climate science, is that it's not, it's, you know, we're heading in a bad direction, but there's still things we can do. We can still do stuff. And that the intricacy of it all is not just as black and white as buy an electric car, problem solved. Like that's not how it works. Like, I'm sorry. That's not how it works. So thank you for bringing that up though, because I do, climate science is something that to me, I'm not super interested in becoming a communicator strongly in that field, but doing core research it's definitely on my radar a lot more than it has been in the past. So I like to make sure that I'm not, you know, I think we also as science communicators have a responsibility, just like combating the fake conspiracy news kind of science things, we have to make sure that we're doing a really good job in making sure that we are presenting information balanced and fair and not inflammatory in the same way. Just like the flat earthers who are just like, no, it's not, blah, 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 right? We should not be doing that either. We need to be making sure that we're presenting our information level-headed, evidence-backed, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, Benjamin, did you have any thoughts on climate science before we have to wrap this up?
Just that it is climate change is a natural phenomenon. It happens slowly over very long periods of time, and I am a member of the species that is accelerating it to ridiculous record temperatures and weather patterns, and I do believe that we can help it.
Yes, which we could do a whole episode on this too, because I'm saying like electric vehicles aren't the fix, but I don't know if you've ever watched Adam Ruins Everything. He is one of my favorite shows of all time. And he has one on like the, you know, the climate or like green, clean energy. And he kind of dispels a lot of myths. And one of the things is that the car industry is not at a place right now where the creation of said car does not offset the impact based on how often people buy cars. So when you just look at that statistical data right now, it's not, it doesn't really outweigh the environmental impact of building the car. And then people like to, you know, especially if you're buying a car that's that expensive, they tend to want to buy new cars as the new models come out. So it's that's sort of the point he made in that.
I love that we ended up on this point at the end of the fluorine episode, because the ozone hole that you were talking about, which happened to have, you know, mostly been around above Australia, but it's closing up, was created by CFCs, by chlorofluorocarbons.
Oh my gosh. It was caused directly by the hairspray hairdos of the 80s. Like, let's just actually call out the problem here. It was your terrible taste in hairstyles, you people in the 80s, if you happen to be listening. That's right, I'm blaming them. Anyway, we gotta wrap this up. We have hit well over our 15-minute mark. You're listening to the Space Kaycera Show. We talked about conspiracy theories and only got through about six. And we are here on IROC Space Radio. You can always go check out information about who we are on the IROC Space Radio page. We have our little biographies on the website page, and there are other shows to listen to. You can follow us on social media. We kind of spew it all the time, so we're going to skip that for the sake of time right now. But yes, thank you so much for tuning in. And if you happen to be on some of our web pages, social media sites, and you see the trolls, you know, you can chime in. Don't feed them, but we don't mind a little bit of backup here and there. Yeah, don't feed the trolls, but, you know, you can also throw your little hat in the ring and combat the people accusing us as Muppets. Although Kavi might actually be one. So
I like that one.
No, I'm not.
You have been listening to the Space Kaycera Show here on IROC Space Radio.